couple of things to tackle here. They're going to be related to housing and homelessness, right? They're not the same thing, but they are not mutually exclusive of each other as well. HUD Secretary Scott Turner has been in Montana, and we'll talk with him here in just a few minutes. Put together a roundtable discussion with Montana Governor Greg Gianforte. This one focused on foster youth to independence. And we'll get into that, too, because that's, in my mind, a critical issue. That was my glasses bumping on the mic, Cody. So I think it's a critical issue, right? And there's a lot of depth to it, too. There is a plan to help some of these youth. The statistics are not good. HUD says roughly 25% of foster care children experience homelessness within 4 years of leaving foster care. Mm. That's an issue. And they're working on that as well. Homelessness and housing affordability on tap here. But Kurt Olme is going to join us in studio as well. So we'll throw all those election themes on the table for him as well. It's affordability, it's energy, it's data centers, and it's how you deal with people like Cody. Whoa. On a Friday. No, actually, that's what we got going here for a Friday on Voices of Montana. Yeah, we're going to get a few minutes here with U.S. HUD Secretary Scott Turner. And this roundtable yesterday, we've got continuing coverage here as well. There's been some good coverage on it, too. It was in Bozeman, and it focused on this foster youth program. And I think that's very valuable when you're trying to, get people on solid ground. And I know that it's a different sort of problem that you have to address when you're talking about foster youth and, you know, why are they in foster care? And that does not escape this HUD director as well. You go to the website, I think I wrote it down somewhere, but it's not hard to find. I think it's actually HUD, HUD.gov. Yeah, that's about as simple as they come. And what you see right up is treatment first. Thank you, Cody, for bringing it up here. Best practices in addressing homelessness and addiction. And I like that approach. I mean, that's the root of the problem when it comes to homelessness. It's also a lot of the root of the problem when it comes to kids in foster care. We are kind, I think, in this country, and our hearts are for people who need help and safety nets. And children especially, right? Isn't that our responsibility? It's parents' responsibility, and that's where we want to keep it. But that fails from time to time. And it not only fails from time to time, but it also gets recovered, too, from time to time. So there's good work being put into that aspect of it, too. But what happens in those failures? Treatment is a big part of that. So I like that approach. We'll maybe get on that, too. But that's, like I say, it's a deep problem, too. And so the HUD secretary was here in Bozeman and heard from former foster youth and Montana service providers. And you hear that an awful lot from Governor Gianforte, who was on the program yesterday, as a matter of fact, and talked about that when he visited Evergreen School, right? How the community approached the superintendent and said, we want to come alongside. And that's key. Come alongside. We don't want to take over your program. We're not here to demand things or expect something in return. We're here just to give. And that kind of community spirit, I really think, goes a long ways. Not only just in what you can accomplish by working together, but also the fact that a lot of people see that and the whole idea behind working together, shines on other areas of need. And hopefully that's how that moves forward, right? So tackling that problem, I think you have to try to tackle the whole problem. Kurt Olme is going to join us here in studio as well, U.S. Senate candidate, right? And we'll pick up this housing crisis issue from that perspective as well. What kinds of policies can go and make a difference there without, in the long run, hindering of folks? There was just a recent article by the Heritage Foundation. They're going to be more of a right-leaning organization. Economist Jack Gibbs studied this and argued that the U.S. housing affordability crisis is not caused by a lack of government intervention, but rather decades of excessive federal involvement in the mortgage market. And he notes that mortgage rates home ownership rates have remained relatively stable. You go back to the 1960s, it was 62 to 63% home ownership rates. Today, it's 65%, despite trillions of dollars in government-backed support. But, you know, it's going to be hard to pull back on that as well. I think he's on to the right thing here, too, is where we find our own solutions and work through that. That takes time, and some people get hurt and lost in the process, and we need safety nets for that. Especially foster youth, as I mentioned. Give these kids a chance. Give them a home. Give them love and guidance, and they'll give back to community. And I think that works out. So we'll take a break here. Take this break early and then come on back. And as we hear from U.S. HUD Secretary Scott Turner, we're also going to have Kurt Almay sneak in studio here, too. So that's going to be super cool. And pick up this conversation. It's going to focus mostly on housing, homelessness, affordability. And then we'll get into some of those campaign things, too. I know I gave this a bit earlier. Kurt Almay is going to join us here in just a little bit, too. We'll continue the conversation about housing. I mentioned that youth foster care, when those kids term out of foster care, 25% of them find themselves homeless in the first 4 to 5 years after that. And so addressing that problem is a new program, as I mentioned here, and it's led by Melania Trump, our First Lady, Foster Youth to Independence. HUD Secretary Scott Turner is in Montana, held a roundtable yesterday that included Governor Greg Gianforte, but also former foster youth and service providers and other stakeholders. And we all ought to be stakeholders in this. Let's welcome now U.S. HUD Secretary Scott Turner to Voices of Montana. Secretary Turner, good morning. I hope you're well, sir.
Good morning, Tom. It's great to be with you, sir.
Thank you. I want to give a first chance for some takeaways. We'll get into this issue a little bit. Two things on our plate is the foster youth thing and this program, and then we'll talk about Montana's housing challenges as well. But talk about this conference. Talk about why you come to Montana, and then you heard from former youth in foster or from youth in former foster care. I'm not putting that right. What's your takeaway from all that, sir?
Yes, sir. You're exactly right. And so we've been to several places around the country as it pertains to our foster youth initiative with First Lady Melania Trump. We've been to San Antonio, Denver, Pittsburgh, and now here in Montana. We had a wonderful roundtable yesterday that did include two young ladies that have aged out of the foster care system. One just very recently, she's 19 years old, and the other has been out just for a couple of years. And we also heard from some of the industry experts, faith-based organizations, that deal particularly in this space of foster youth. And so we were able to hear from those young ladies yesterday some things that they faced that are difficulties. We heard both of their testimonies, high-level testimony of what they've experienced in their life as foster children. And then we heard from some of the experts in the industries, from our public housing authorities, our faith-based organizations that have helped foster youth along the way and that are here to continue to make sure that the foster youth here in Montana have a stable place to live as they carry on their education, raise their families, look for new career opportunities. So I'm very blessed to be here, and I'm grateful for the president and for the First Lady for their partnership.
This program began in 2019, and that's maybe long enough to talk about the effectiveness of it.
Yes, sir. So as you alluded to, about 20,000 children a year age out of the foster care system, and about 25% of those experience a level of homelessness within the 4 years. But some encouraging news, since President Trump took office in partnership with the First Lady and HUD, we've supported more than 1,700 youth with approximately about $23 million in FYI funding. And HUD, in partnership with the First Lady, we secured about $30 million for foster youth housing in the president's fiscal year 26 budget. And so that is very encouraging. But to go back to 2019, what you alluded to, over $100 million has been awarded to more than 8,900 FYI vouchers that have really assisted individual foster youth at about 409 public housing authorities around our country, including the Virgin Islands. And so there has been great progress made which we're grateful for.
Yeah.
But there needs to be more progress in the days ahead.
How do you put forward, because I think as we're trying to solve our housing issues, or actually a lot of issues, some of the best solutions are long-term solutions. But in this country, we've grown to have short-term expectations. How do you manage trying to accomplish things that, again, just have a longer-term vision on it when we're expecting more kind of short-term results?
Yeah, well, I think it's one and the same, you know, or it's both and. We have to have short-term results because we have right now needs. And in particular with our foster youth, you know, we have foster youth that are aging out every day in our country. And we want them to be able to have a stable place to land and lay their head at night, to put their feet on the ground. I mean, some of these foster youth have children, and we want them to have a place where they can raise their children in a safe place. And so short term, you know, that is a concentration. But long term, we want to make the fixes to where the gaps that we learn about in these roundtables, you know, we want to fill those gaps. You know, the time that it takes for them to age out and then for them to find their first place, that's too much time. And so we want to shrink or eliminate that time to where they can be ready to not only age out, but to land that day into a place that's safe and sustainable for them and their families. And so for our foster youth, that is a short-term and a long-term fix that we're working on, and that's why we have these roundtables, you know, so that we can attack both of those areas.
U.S. Secretary Scott Turner with us here. Regarding this foster care program that, again, initiated by Melania Trump, and Secretary Turner, I want to move a little bit because I know our time is short here. I noted on your website, HUD.gov, you see the first page is treatment first, right? And that's it's vital. I mean, you're addressing root causes here, and that's sort of the long-term solution to things, tackling the whole problem. In Montana, we're it's not necessarily a homelessness. It's a housing crisis and affordability and supply crisis as well. What are the dynamics that can turn that around?
Yes, sir. And so I'll take one step back and then I'll move forward. Mm-hmm. You know, here in Montana under Governor Jim Forte, from a foster youth standpoint, there's been a 47% decrease in the amount of foster youth that do not have a home. And, man, that is a huge, huge accomplishment, and I know that the governor and his team and others around the state are continuously working on it. That's a model that the country can follow, but almost a 50% decrease in foster youth that don't have a home is very encouraging. But if you look at housing affordability, man, when we came into the administration, we found out, you know, the number one burden to building affordable housing is the regulatory environment. And so we at HUD, we started, we don't want to ask people to do something we're not willing to do. So we start tearing down red tape and bureaucratic policies at HUD, like the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing, which put a mountain of paperwork on localities. We rescinded that. We also rescinded the International Energy Conservation Code, which was a Biden-era code, a final determination that put up to $30,000 per project on the final cost of a single-family home. And so we rescinded that. And we just published, Tom, and you don't like this, we just published a few weeks ago our regulatory best practices report, which helps state governments and local government, not a mandate, but recommendations as a culmination of our research. What are best practices that the states and localities are doing to tear down a regulatory environment to build affordable housing? And here in Montana, it's something that we heard about yesterday about the housing affordability, but essentially around our country, we hear about this, and the focus has to be tearing down red tape from the localities and from state governments to unleash building to make it easier to build and easier to buy.
How effective can that be?
It can be very effective if people do it. When I've been to 51 cities around our country, Tom, and the number one question I ask people, what is the problem to build an affordable housing? And the number one issue, again, comes up and everybody recognizes it, everybody speaks it. It's the regulatory environment. So my very next sentence is, what are you here locally going to do about it? And when we start putting the innovativeness, the ingenuity, and the creativity that we have in the American people and leaders in localities, put politics aside, put personal agendas aside, and say, hey, how do we build housing for our localities? And with public-private partnerships, with the facilitation of our governments, when people actually start doing that, like our best practice report, you could see that housing begins to be built.
HUD Secretary Scott Turner, did anybody take you fishing, Scott? Anybody take you on a hike?
Not yet, sir, but everybody has offered, indeed. Everybody has been very kind.
I'm glad to hear that, and I appreciate you coming out and addressing this issue, you know, with thoughtfulness and that vision, you know, and it takes that as well. And I appreciate comments about how stakeholders need to come and involve themselves in almost every aspect of these issues that we're tackling. Keep up the good work, sir. Thank you so much, Scott.
Thank you, Tom.
U.S. HUD Secretary Scott Turner here in Montana for, this roundtable as well to address this problem, specifically Foster Youth to Independence, a program that's been around for a little while here, 2019. We're going to just switch right into an interview with Kurt Allmay, who's in studio here. Pop that down, and let's get on the air just like that. U.S. Senate candidate, GOP, and good morning, sir.
Good morning, Tom. Good to be here.
Thank you for coming in. Are you, how's the road treating you?
Road's treating us well. You know, we're on a second pair of shoes. We're about ready to put a second set of tires on the rig, and we're ready to go.
That's the fun thing, I think. I don't know. I love Montana. I know you do as well. Being born here, Great Falls, graduated Miles City, right? Isn't it? It's fun, and you learn a lot. What are you learning out there?
Oh, I'll tell you. You know, Tom, we've been Ekalaka to Eureka. We've been Scobie down to Hamilton. Now we're painting in all the counties in between and, you know, running into a lot of old friends, making a lot of new ones, but hearing about all sorts of issues around the state, everything from affordability, public safety, being sure we protect our Montana way of life. All those things are top of mind for Montanans.
What are your thoughts? And maybe we'll go right to, as I have this HUD site still up here, the front page says treatment first, best practices in addressing homelessness and addiction. And he also, Scott Turner noted, red tape is a big part of that, and they have best practices also available there. I get into that, and I see the root causes of problems for housing affordability. You know, it's supply and demand an awful lot too, and maybe government interference in mortgage markets. For homelessness, it's a whole different sort of cause here, but they are not necessarily completely separate as well. You know, what are your thoughts about improving our homeownership rate in Montana, especially for low to middle income people, if they have a home, that's their largest investment, and that really solidifies some wealth for the future for them?
Great question, Tom. You know, when my wife and I moved back to Montana early 90s, we were able to buy a small house. We were able to make the mortgage payments. We were able to start a family. My kids are now that age. They can't afford to do it. That's not right.
Mine too.
We've got to figure out how to crack this code. And you heard the secretary talk about the big limitation on new supply, and that's regulation. We have got to get regulation, red tape stripped away so that we can get more supply. We can get it quicker. We can get it cheaper. But it's more than that. On the positive side, Tom, you know, the Dallas Fed just put out a preliminary report that showed the massive number of illegal immigrants we had during the Biden administration increased rent costs by 20% and housing costs by 30%.
Not enough people are talking about that, Chris.
So securing the border is going to be already a good step in that direction. But, you know, the two keys are we've got to keep taxes low to keep money in people's pockets and cut red tape, not only for housing, but so that we can create more good paying jobs and that people keep more money from their paycheck, put it in their pockets. And then the big one is we have got to control this deficit spending. This deficit spending that's going on in Washington is pushing up inflation, and it's pushing up mortgage rates. And if we don't get those 6.7% mortgage rates down, it's going to be awfully tough for anybody to buy a new home. And that's directly tied to the reckless spending we've got going on in Washington.
I appreciate that response too. And again, as we try to tackle this, we think, we got to have more and more government programs. I looked as I get studying, and I appreciate this job because it forces me to get into some of these issues here as well. I looked at a recent Heritage Foundation report that noted how, despite the trillions of dollars we have spent government-wise to encourage homeownership, that hasn't changed that much. 62 to 63% in the 1960s, 65% today. So what's the balance, sir? I mean, and you, a candidate for Senate as well, you'll get into Washington, D.C., and you'll see how difficult it might be to balance the needs of the people with how the government can address that efficiently.
Yeah, I think... you know, if you put your thumb on the scale one way or the other, I put my thumb on the scale, less government involvement, fewer regulations, lower taxes so people can afford to make their house payments or make their rent payments, and then less deficit spending, less government spending. And that, again, that'll keep inflation and mortgage rates down. Now, we do need government intervention to keep that border secure. You know, every country's got to keep its border secure, and we've seen what happened when you don't. And so if we can keep that border secure and keep illegal aliens from flooding into the market and driving up demand and increasing prices, and then get government out of the way the rest of the time, I think we'll see the housing market right size.
And I appreciate that as well. Instead of, you know, throwing money into a solution here, you're putting thought into it and really looking at the root cause of things here. Illegal immigration, and that is something, as I look back at what has transpired, it still sticks in my craw. Just as an individual person, I feel very let down by that policy. I think it was very purposeful, and I think it was underhanded and also not in our best interest. And so I have a sore spot there about that, Kurt. Thanks for touching that. Let's get into that, okay? It happened, and now we have to deal with it happening and try to rectify that. That process is kind of messy.
Yeah, Tom, you know I was United States Attorney twice for President, and both President Trump's first term and his second term, so we dealt firsthand with the issues around border security. And what happened when President Biden had his open border policy in effect, we had millions of illegal aliens come into this country unvetted, which means we had members of Tren de Aragua and MS-13 and the cartels freely coming into our country and coming onto our streets. You know, an example is Jose Ibarra, who we're all aware of. He came across the border in Texas, was stopped by Biden's DHS, released, went to New York, got arrested by the police. It's a sanctuary city. They released him. He ended up in Atlanta, Georgia, and killed Lakin Riley, the nursing student, in a brutal murder. And that's a murder that never should have happened. And we need to keep securing the border, and then we need to focus on getting these violent criminals who got into the country arrested, prosecuted, deported, and out of our country.
And accountability for that, you know, it can come in a number of places, but I think the best place for that is still us as citizens exercising our right to choose our leaders as well. Is that the only accountability?
Well, you know, I think we're having a choice in this election. Do we want to go back to these Biden-era policies of not only open borders, but also defunding the police, the higher taxes, the reckless inflationary spending, the boys and girls sports, the woke DEI, or do we want to go forward? And, you know, my record is cutting taxes. It's balancing budgets, and it's locking up violent criminals.
A lot of things on the plate this election. Affordability is one of them. We'll get into that. We got a little more time with you here, and I know how busy you are, so I'm glad to see you popping in studio here. I think I'm going to start with energy. Tease us a little bit about how well the public understands the complexity of affordable energy.
Well, I mean, everybody sees it because we see it in our utility bills. We see it as every time we fill up our gas when we're, you know, whether it's a heating bill, whether it's a cooling bill, it's readily apparent to all of us. And the best way that we can make energy affordable is to increase supply. And, you know, if we increase supply, not only are we going to have cheaper energy, we're going to have more jobs in Montana, we're going to have a bigger tax base in rural Montana, and we're going to make Montana, or make the United States, energy independent and not dependent on rogue country.
Kurt Almay is in studio. He's a GOP Senate candidate. Almay for Senate. It's ALME for Senate.com for a lot more information on that as well. He was also previously Montana's Department of Revenue Director, served a couple of times as the U.S. Attorney for Montana, the governor's budget director, to a lot of experience in that regard. And that's why one of his main themes is getting spending under control in this country. And I love to hear that because that debt clock just keeps, you know, twirling around and it's not going the other way. And also, Kurt, thanks for coming in. You served in a leadership role with the Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch Foundation. Nancy called from Roundup, and we're going to pick up her topic and go back into this, the immigration and the housing as well. What did you see, you know, as in that role for the Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch Foundation that relates to what we're talking about?
Yeah, it was good to hear Secretary Turner talking about foster care and You know, what's happened when, since I was budget director with the governor in 2021, and the governor's been able to bring down the number of kids in foster care by 47% is amazing. But there's more that needs to be done. Secretary Turner's talked about that transition when these kids hit 18 and they age out of the system. They need help getting on their feet so they don't end up homeless and poverty and unemployed, all those high-risk things that hit foster care kids. But when I was at Yellowstone Boys and Girls Ranch Foundation, we were focusing, the ranch focuses on, it has one of the largest foster care programs in the state, and focus on trying to help these kids. And what we saw 10 years ago when meth hit this state is an increase in the number of kids that the state was asking Yellowstone to take because the parents had an addiction problem. So a second issue we need to talk about is how we're going to deal with substance abuse. Because when the parents are on meth or the parents are on fentanyl, the kids can end up in foster care. And we need to be able to bridge that gap, help get those parents clean so they can be reunited with their kids faster.
That's the root of a lot of problems in our country, including crime. As you note, and you go and we'll talk with law enforcement, but being in that arena, so to speak, the sheriffs are saying 90% of the crimes we deal with are because of drug addiction in that regard. But as I kind of talked with Scott about, that's a long-term solution, right? Does it take education? Has education been helpful? Enforcement, that's a helpful part of this as well. How do we get a long-term solution in a short expectation society?
Yeah, so appreciate that question, Tom. Great question. First, let me just say, I sure appreciate our sheriffs. I was grateful that 34 of our sheriffs from across the state have endorsed me. We had a wonderful working relationship with them, and we all saw it the same way. We can get violent crime down if we address the drug problem. And it's a 1-2 punch. We need to deal with the supply side, and we need to deal with the demand side. We're just talking about the demand side. How do we work with education and prevention to keep kids from getting started on drugs in the first place? And then when they do get started, we need to expand treatment so that we can help get people off. And when I was budget director for Governor Gianforte, as well as U.S. Attorney, we expanded the Heart Fund to provide additional funding for people coming out of prison to be able to not get back on drugs. We expanded drug courts, both on reservations and healing and wellness courts. We helped facilitate them on our Indian reservations, again, to try to get demand down. But if we pivot over to enforcement and supply reduction, boy, the president is on the right track. He has he's laid out a 6-point plan. Number one is we need to go after China and India and stop the importation of precursor chemicals for meth and fentanyl into Mexico. Then we need to work with those countries to attack and address the cartels in the countries where they're making the drugs. Third, which the president's done a great job of, is secure the border. And then a fourth major one is we need to, as we do drug enforcement in Montana and across the United States, when we get a drug trafficker arrested, we need to work upstream all the way up to the cartel supplier and rip that whole drug trafficking organization out by the roots. And that's what's happening now with the Homeland Security Task Forces. We have all federal law enforcement agencies pooling intelligence so that when we pick up a drug dealer on the streets of Butte or Missoula or Billings, we can figure out how do they plug into a drug trafficking organization in Denver or Phoenix or across the border, and then how do we work to tear that organization out upstream.
What's the encouraging news there, Kurt?
Well, the encouraging news already is violent crime is down across the country. If I recall, it was down almost 9% in the first year of President Trump's presidency last year, which is the second largest drop in violent crime since they've been tracking those statistics. So we know the recipe. We just need the will to go forward and continue to execute.
And, you know, this is sort of a comment on my own here, but these drugs are a scourge on our society. And our enemies, so to speak, or our adversaries, I don't know how you want to put it. Sometimes we can work hand in hand on some things, but that whole idea that we can attack America internally by ruining our families and our communities, I'm glad that is becoming more and more aware, because that is a scar that is deep and it can last. That's my observation. In addressing that, how hard, how deep, I mean, how many sanctions, what can we do to get those countries to recognize that America is not going to stand for that. And also, that is a very, very bad thing that you're doing.
Yeah, well, what President Trump has done with his tariff negotiations with China and India, this has been part and parcel of that.
It has. It's complicated.
It's complicated. It's all rolled into larger trade policy, larger economic policy. But a major priority the president has talked about is convincing the Chinese government and the Indian government to stop sending and allowing precursor chemicals to be sent to Mexico and other countries, obviously for the sole purpose of creating drugs then to be brought into the United States.
Okay, I'm going to move on. Kurt Allman with us here, GOP Senate candidate. That election's upcoming here, making a lot of visits around. Your chance to get in touch with him, allmanforsenate.com. And I know schedule's always busy, right? I want to get back to one of the major campaign issues that we're hearing about, and it's, again, complicated, and there's sound bites out there that, you know, sound good, but I don't know that they explain the entire issue, and that's data centers, right? I think we have a need for them. I don't think the science is all in on it. There's more transparency. So from three perspectives, what do data centers need to do? What do local communities need to do? And what can legislators do to make this work out for us?
You bet. So great topic right now. Talk about this all across the state and appreciate the way you broke down the different perspectives. I think from the data center company's point of view, they need to be transparent. They need to be very clear that they need to come in early. They need to be forthright with the community, no cutting corners, and they need to be sure all questions get answered. Then I think we as policymakers need to be sure there are guardrails in place. We need to be sure that none of the electricity costs that are associated with a data center are going to impact ratepayers. In fact, we should work to be sure that rates go down and that data center companies pay not only their fair share, but pay more than their fair share. Then we got to be sure water is taken care of. We want to be sure that water rights aren't impacted, water quality isn't impacted, and we want to be sure that good-paying jobs land in the local economy. We've got a lot of trades unions that are out there looking for good work, that do good work. These are good-paying jobs, and so we want to be sure that those good-paying jobs land on Montana workers.
Yes.
If we can get those basic guardrails in place, then we got to turn to the community and say, you know, this is a community decision. We need people in the community to have input, be sure they're fully educated on the pros and cons of having a data center in their community, and let the local communities make that decision. So that's something I'll always fight for, is be sure that we have the voice of Montanans get heard in Washington, in this case, get heard locally. You know, we have Ratepayer Protection Act that's working its way through Congress now that will deal with the electricity component of that. I certainly am a big supporter, but I think everybody, as you pointed out, Tom, has a role to play here to be sure that good decisions are made by local communities about whether they want to have a data center in their community or not, and if so, to be sure any impacts are mitigated.
Is there policy that can assist in that? And you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, a 900-page piece of policy. You know, take the low-hanging fruit if you can get it, so to speak. But what kind of policies can bring those components together? You know, transparency, the data center people, and the communities, and water.
Yeah, I think those are exactly the policy issues we ought to be talking about. You know, the Ratepayer Protection Act that's working its way through Congress, I think will help with the will help address the electricity side. But we need comprehensive guardrails that deal with all three of those things. Power, deal with water. Well, and noise, land has to be in there too. All the impacts on a local community, as well as jobs. And all of that should be rolled into a set of guardrails that's there for every data center company that wants to come into a community.
So give us a little taste of the campaign trail. Are you, I know you got to run off here, but where can people access you? What's your kind of plan from here going forward so you can get in front of people so you guys can create that relationship?
Yeah, love to see people. We're all over the state. Like I said, we've been Eureka to Ekalaka. We've been Scobie down to Hamilton. We're painting all the counties in between. We're going to be out all the way up till November 3rd. As we come into communities, we hope that people come out to our events so that we can see them. It's been fantastic to get to shake people's hands, look people in the eye, and learn what issues are important to people of Montana.
Are they bringing ideas?
Well, people are bringing up, yeah. We're getting great ideas. We're getting great conversation. You know, if we have a lot of knowledge, we've got a lot of experience in this state. We just got to coalesce it, bring it together, and bring it to Washington, and be sure those voices get heard.
Are people ready to work together? You know, we talk about the multiple stakeholders in every issue, but sometimes those stakeholders don't come to the table. Are people ready to work together to solve these issues, Kurt?
Well, I'll tell you, we need to be. We need to be. Some of these issues, you know, we talk about a $40 trillion debt. Let's just start there. We have all got to work together to try to bring spending under control. What we're doing to our kids and our grandkids by mortgaging their future is unconscionable. We all need to come together, and we need to protect future generations, and we need to be sure everybody in this country is protected and can realize the American dream.
Well, thanks for your service to the public, and thanks for throwing your hat in the ring too, and thanks for, you know, beating it on the campaign trail too, because I just love that in Montana still, our representatives are out there to learn how to better represent.
So, that's been great. And, you know, having lived all over Montana and having family, everywhere we go, we're running into old friends, we're running into family members. That's been the best part of this campaign.
Well, get out of here and keep that trail hot, okay?
All right, Tom, thanks. See you at the game tonight, huh?
Right. Hey, Kurt Almay again, U.S. Senate candidate from Great Falls and Miles City, but let's just say Montana. Thank you, Kurt.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.